Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome into Redacted, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. This is the week before Christmas, maybe the last week before you're heading off for a break, but we're here. There's a lot of news. You may have noticed. Big news, as it seems like the West is continuing to go through its existential crisis, perhaps leading to civil war. Is that how we're going to get to the other side of this? That's not what I voted for, but man, I don't know what, because it seems like we're more divided than ever. It does not seem like there is justice for all in the United States, and we're going to talk about that. The Supreme Court ruling that Donald Trump can no longer be on the ballot, at least in Colorado, and what's going to happen there.
We're also going to look at the CIA spying case as it relates to Julian Assange and a major breakthrough in that case with the courts. We'll talk about that. Plus, the mainstream media is dying. We maybe want to put a pin in it. When you look at the numbers for CNN, MSNBC, even Fox News, the legacy media is dying very, very quickly in favor of the independent media. And well, we're going to look at those numbers today because it is startling. So all of that and more as Redacted starts right now. Everybody to Redacted on this Wednesday. So glad to have you all here. Thank you guys so much for subscribing and being a part of our community. We really appreciate it. And also, we want to thank you for signing up for our daily newsletter. We have a daily newsletter that goes out first thing in the morning. And all you need to do is sign up for free. Go to redacted.inc, put in your email address. You'll receive a welcome email from me, which is just clayton@redacted.inc. And then you will be linked up and receive that newsletter first thing in the morning. So, you know, it's very, very simple to sign up. And when you do, once you receive that welcome email, make sure you drag it out of your spam folder, because it might be in your spam folder. And, Gmail has labeled us as dangerous, which is hilarious. So it might be in your spam folder, it might be in your junk folder. Drag it over to your inbox. And then you will receive the newsletter first thing in the morning, Monday through Thursday. And you can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes over your cup of coffee. We cover a lot of the big stories of the day. We try to make you laugh a little bit. We try not to make you cry, but we try to get you out of there in, 5 to 10 minutes, and then you're off to your day. So once again, redacted.inc is the place to go. Redacted.inc. Well, last week, Hollywood released a trailer for a new movie showing a civil war coming to the United States. Is on purpose, of course, predictive programming to get us ready for what's coming. We are witnessing an attack on the United States by the deep state, or the permanent government, if you will. And they're pulling out every last trick in the book to keep Donald Trump from winning and running in 2024. Last night, the Colorado Supreme Court ruled that Donald Trump is unfit to be on the 2024 presidential ballot, of course, citing the 14th Amendment, that he engaged in insurrection to overthrow the government. And this is just the beginning, folks. Presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy called this ruling illegal and pledged immediately to withdraw from the Colorado GOP primary ballot until Trump is also allowed to be on the ballot. Watch his announcement.
I'm making a pledge today that I will withdraw. I pledge to withdraw from the Colorado GOP primary ballot unless and until Trump's name is restored. And I demand that Ron DeSantis and Chris Christie and Nikki Haley do the same thing, or else these Republicans are simply complicit in this unconstitutional attack on the way we conduct our constitutional republic.
Well, Vivek is perhaps the only candidate with balls standing on principle on this. And he joins us now, Vivek. Nice to see you joining us from Iowa today. Thanks for joining us.
It's good to be on. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. So why it seemed to me when this announcement broke yesterday, you were in between campaign stops there in Iowa, and you immediately released a video in between campaign stops and sent out that message that we just played here, that you wanted to be removed from the ballot as well. And you called upon Nikki Haley, Chris Christie, and Ron DeSantis also to join you in that effort. Why did you do that? And why did you do it so quickly?
I just felt immediately like the thing to do. I mean, either you believe that this is an unconstitutional illegal maneuver or you don't. But if you do, and I think obviously it is, then there's one right answer. Effectively eliminate the Colorado has on primary, because that completely nullifies the move that they're trying to make. So if no Republican is running on that ballot, then their removal of Trump does not have the effect of election interference that they want it to have. And so for me, look, I can't wait for the other people to do the right thing. But to me, that's the way you have a problem that comes up. It's a threat. Take the legs out from under that threat, convincing the voters of this country, not by having the Democrat cabal in the back rooms of some sort of palace hall called a courtroom decide the way we marry. And so for me, it seemed like the obvious thing to do. It's been interesting to hear the radio silence from the likes of Nikki Haley and DeSantis and Chris Christie since then. I think that reveals something deeper that is going on, is this isn't really just a partisan assault. I would say a partisan consensus that's actually skeptical of our republic, that's skeptical of the people's ability to choose the leadership of a country. I think there are a lot of people in this country who now believe quietly, amongst Republicans and Democrats both, that the people can't be trusted to fight climate change, to address racial injustice, or in this case, to decide who the Republican nominees should be, that it's their job as the super PAC puppet masters or the people who are more enlightened to make that choice. And that's not just a Democrat issue. That exists solidly within the Republican Party as well. And I think that's a big part of the mentality that I'm fighting against in this country, to revive the basic idea that we, the people, should select who leads this country, which I don't think should be that complicated.
When you've been obviously campaigning nonstop and you're talking to average Americans, I think we see it every night on our show. Our viewers do not believe their elected representatives represent them. And they certainly don't believe those elected representatives are actually running the country. There is a deep state. There is a permanent government in the United States that's running things. And one of my big criticisms of Trump was that when he got in there to drain the swamp initially, that didn't happen. It actually got worse. We're led to believe that this time, I guess, it will happen. That's something you actively want to do, to get rid of the corruption in Washington, D.C. You're up against a behemoth. I mean, have they come after you in a way to really prevent you from doing this? And when you get there, what would be different from Trump, you in Washington, being able to drain the swamp to get rid of all of that corruption, close down these departments that are permanently running the show?
Yeah, so look, I think that there's been a nonprofit report that came out a couple weeks ago that said I've been the most censored and shadow banned candidate in this race. I think it's not by accident. It's not because the things I'm saying are false. It's because they're true. So my worldview is simple for this country. Two bedrock principles, right? We talk about the America First movement. What does that actually mean? It comes down to two things. The people who we elect to run the government should be the ones who actually run the government. That isn't the case today. And number two is those elected officials owe a sole duty to the citizens of this country, not any other one. That guides my perspective. And I think that part of what I'm aiming to do here is to take our America First movement to the next level. We need to say what we actually stand for. I think those are two North Star principles that we can use. How am I going to be able to go further than Trump? I'll tell you. I give Trump a lot of credit for rolling over that log. We saw what crawled out. I'm bringing the pesticide. Okay, I'll tell you what that means. It takes somebody who's not just a businessman with sharp elbows coming from the outside. Trump brings that, I bring that. Okay, and you've seen me willing to break glass on the debate stage or elsewhere. That's what I'm going to do in Washington, D.C. But it also takes somebody who knows and understands the law and the Constitution in this country deeply, first personally, or else they're going to dupe you. Okay, they told Trump that you know, those civil service protections apply to those federal bureaucrats and you can't fire them. Not quite. Read the law. Those civil service protections only protect against individual employee firings. They do not apply to mass layoffs. And mass firings are absolutely what I am bringing to the DC bureaucracy. Okay, that's a big difference here. Individual firings, okay, you can't do that. You got to understand the law deeply. The Presidential Reorganization Act of 1977, it says under similar circumstances, the U.S. president can shut down agencies if those agencies are redundant, if doing so would promote the economy or efficiency of operations. That's what I'm going to use to shut down the Department of Education, to shut down and reorganize the FBI and the national security state, to actually shut down the ATF, the CDC, number of other agencies that fit that description. And I would say those two qualities don't usually go together, right? You might have the nerdy academic law professor type over here, the business guy who can execute over here. That's part of what pulled me into this race, is I think that that's what this moment demands. I think those qualities don't usually go together. And yes, I'm confident I'm going to be able to do that, to take the America First agenda, to take the anti-bureaucratic agenda, the deep state, the anti-deep state agenda, to the next level in this country. And so I'll give Trump the credit for exposing a lot of that problem. Now we got to go to the next level and actually shut it down.
Do you believe, as some have suggested, that this, we are seeing the first warning signs of a civil war in the United States?
So I don't use that word lightly, and I worry about speaking about civil war. It's one of these things that speaks itself into existence. So I'm very careful when talking about this, but I do believe we're in the middle of a kind of ideological, cold, cultural civil war in this country. It's between those of us who love the United States of America and those who, frankly, hate this country and wish to see our ideals cease. You know, every politician dances to the tune of their biggest donor. And in my case, that biggest donor is me. And so when people have a choice to make, I give you one rule of thumb. If you want somebody who's going to get in there and actually speak truth to power, actually shut down the deep state, then vote for somebody who's going to speak the truth to you. And there's a reason why I'm the only candidate in this race who's able to speak the truth about what really happened on January 6th, looking increasingly like it was the product of entrapment, an inside job, about Ron McDaniel needing to be fired as the chairwoman of the RNC, the climate change agenda that's being used as effectively an infringement on our sovereignty that's a hoax because it has nothing to do with the climate. There's a reason I've said I'd pardon peaceful J6 protesters on day one who have been wrongfully charged or imprisoned despite being the product of entrapment or having their constitutional rights denied, or those who were merely peaceful that day. There's a reason I'm the only candidate who's in this race who's able to say these things. And as I said, your best chance of somebody who's actually going to get this done and speak truth to power, start with somebody who's speaking the truth to you. And that's what I'm doing in this race. And I think it's going to take somebody who's unafraid of the consequences of that to actually have a chance of getting this job done.
I'll get you out of here on this, Vivek. Another thing that a lot of people love to dance around is Israel. And they love to dance around the military-industrial complex, and they love to dance around the money that we send to Ukraine. Where do you come down on Israel? Do you think the United States is controlled by the Israeli lobby, those members of Congress, the United States government? Do you think the United States is funneling too much money? And do you think that Israel is carrying out a genocide? Where do you come down on this? Do you think that Israel is carrying out a genocide?
I'll tell you where I come down. So I don't think that the use of the word genocide is appropriate there, because 20% of the Palestinians, 20% of Israel's population is Palestinian. And the place on earth where Palestinians live the best life is in Israel. But I'll tell you, I'm not running to be president of Israel, and I'm not running to be president of any other country. I'm running to be president of the United States of America. So as it relates to Ukraine, I'd end that war. And I've talked about that extensively. You asked about Israel. Here's my view. We shouldn't be intervening in that war. My message to Israel is Israel absolutely has the absolute right to defend itself, and I'll diplomatically stand for Israel's right to do so. But I'm against the $16 billion or $14 billion or whatever it is aid package. I don't think that's good for Israel, and I don't think it's good for the United States when we muddy the waters. And so it's not our job to be the global policeman, and I take issue with those, Biden or others, that are now going in the direction of calling what Israel's response is a genocide or whatever. I think that's inappropriate. It's off the mark. But I also don't want to intervene half in, half out in these conflicts in the Middle East that haven't advanced our interests. Frankly, the Taliban's still in charge in Afghanistan 20 years later. Iraq is still a broken country after our failed occupation and invasion on false pretenses of another nation. So I won't make those same mistakes on my watch. And in the same way as the father of two sons, my moral duty is to my family. As your president, my sole moral duty is to the citizens of this nation, the United States of America, not any other one. And so for me, that's moral clarity. That's how I'm going to lead this country. Frankly, I think that's better for Israel. But I think more importantly for me as the next president of the United States, that's better for the United States. That's where I land. And, you know, as you can see, you know, I don't, you know, a lot of candidates are very coached on how they talk about these issues. I'm going to share with you my candid convictions. I think we deserve a president who tells the truth to the people again in this country. That's what I'm doing. And I think I'm our best chance to revive what this country was founded on, stand for actual America First principles. America First doesn't come with an asterisk for me. It comes with actual commitment to what we stand for. The people who we elect to run the government should be the ones who actually run the government. And the sole moral duty they have is to the citizens of this nation, not any other one. That's how I'll lead this country. And you know, if that's what the people of this country want, then I'm in it for 8 years to revive who we are.
Last night, your event, your name came up. Our friend Tucker Carlson was asked, who do they like as a potential VP for Trump? And I know you're running for president. You want to be president of the United States. If that doesn't happen, and if President Trump calls you and says, Vivek, I'd like you to be my vice presidential nominee, what would you say to him?
I mean, look, it's funny. A lot of people in Iowa at these events, I'm about to walk into one now, they come in. Several people have told me this. I came in asking you to be Trump's VP. I left thinking that Trump should be your VP, right? I think Tucker would make a pretty interesting VP too. I mean, if you want kind of a sharp advisor and that's what you want in the role of a VP, I think Tucker could be a great choice for myself. And if Trump's the nominee, I think Tucker could be great for him. I'm not a plan B guy, or have been. I didn't get to where I am tearing down bureaucracy and achieving success by being a plan B person. I'm not going to start now. But you know what? If I'm the nominee, I will believe that Donald Trump could be an excellent person who could advise me through that.
I love it. Well, that's what we tell our kids.
So I got a role, man.
No plan B's in our family. No plan B's. Vivek, great to see you. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Good luck at the event.
Thanks, man. Talk to you. Bye.
Thanks. He has to run to an event there. So,
you know,
in
what Arnold
Iowa.
Schwarzenegger said about plan B? Plan B is to succeed at plan A.
Right. Well, of course, no candidate's going to come out and say, right. Yeah, I would love to be vice president. Sure. I think maybe Elizabeth Warren said that actually. We're like, well, but aren't you running for president? I think she was like, I definitely consider it. And I'm like, okay, well, your plan A then sounds a little faulty there. So no one's going to actually come out and say that. But interesting that he was the first person to come out and call for this ballot removal process in Colorado. And then later today, then we saw Nikki Haley and we saw Ron DeSantis come out and also condemn it. But they, you know, took overnight to do that and through committee on that. So, you know, it's interesting to see specifically on the Trump question. There's a lot of stuff we could have covered. We only had a short window here with him tonight. We're going to have a deeper conversation with Vivek in the coming weeks here, probably after the holiday. But I just wanted to get him on specifically to talk about this Trump issue. And a lot of people, I'd love to hear your thoughts on his position on Israel. I'd love to hear your thoughts on his positions on draining the swamp and whether or not he could actually pull that off. Someone in the chat said, come on, Clayton, how do you expect someone to drain the swamp in 4 years? It's going to take a lot longer than that. And I totally agree with you on that. My criticism of Donald Trump is that there was no draining of the swamp at all. In fact, it was added upon. Well, even people who worked for him acknowledge it.
He didn't even take the muck off the top. I mean, at least you would get the muck off the top so that the water was clean on top, then go deeper. But like, he didn't even do that.
Now, but you could argue, you could say, okay, well, he was surrounded by people who kept him from doing that.
We're company guys. Right.
And they talked him out of doing that.
Reporting about bombing Somalia. He said, can't we just stop that? Can't we get that out? Just get out of there. And he reportedly said, was told, no, sir, we can't. It's complicated. And he was just kind of led by the nose by people who were already entrenched in the system.
Yeah. So interesting. Anyway, we'll have more on that. And we're also going to dive more deeply into the legal side of it. So we got the political side of it on what happened in Colorado this afternoon now, where California is now laying the groundwork. The lieutenant governor of California is now laying the groundwork to follow in Colorado's footsteps and try to get Trump thrown off the ballot in California. Of course, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of conservatives that live in California and times are changing in California. So, you know,
so you may think like, oh, well, no Republican's going to win California anyway. But California is turning more purple than you think, especially as these Democratic cities collapse in decay and homelessness. And people are thinking, what do I do to not live like this?
Right. And they're moving to Nevada and Arizona. They're like, we're out of here. California saw the biggest migration, biggest migration patterns out of that state into Arizona and Utah and Nevada. So we were going to deep dive the legal side of this in just moments. And we're also going to look at Julian Assange tonight. We got a busy show for you.
But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at Provia, because if you are one of the millions of American women or men of any age dealing with premature hair thinning and loss, maybe you're scared about inheriting that thinning look because it just runs in the family. Well, now there's a real solution that delivers on its promise without the harsh side effects, unwanted chemicals, and no need for a prescription. Provia uses a safe, natural ingredient called Procapil to effectively target the three main causes of premature hair thinning and loss. So by supporting healthy scalp circulation, the delivery of nourishing ingredients and healthy hair follicles anchoring to your scalp, Provia guarantees more hair on your head than in the shower or on your comb. It's effective for men and women of any age, and it's safe on colored or treated hair and styled hair. It's that easy. So check it out for yourself. Look around the website. See if Provia is something that might help you. Right now, new customers can save over 50% plus free shipping on Provia's introductory package at proviahair.com/redacted. Every package includes a full 60-day supply of Provia serum for daily use, plus the Provia Super Concentrate for faster, more noticeable results. And it includes your choice of a free gift right now. Although I warn you, can you take my single shot again? When your hair starts to regrow, sometimes it looks like this. Look, mine looks like feathers tonight. It just keeps sticking up. When you get those growth spurts of your hair, it looks like I have feathers here. So that's growing pains. You got to go through that when your hair is healthy and growing. So right now, check it out. You can go get 10% off just in time for the holidays. It's proviahair.com/redacted. Once again, that's proviahair.com/redacted.
Let's talk about the legal implications, the legal side of this. Now, let's leave the emotion out of it, and let's specifically look at how the Supreme Court in Colorado ruled in this 4-3 decision, disqualifying President Trump from being on the ballot, grounded in the 14th Amendment of the United States. Now, I want to play for you, before we bring in our constitutional expert here and legal maven, our brilliant mind here in a second, but I want to play for you, perhaps not a legal maven and not a legal genius, the Secretary of State of Colorado, Jenna Griswold. She was on CNN. Watch her smiling ear to ear at this decision and how she lays this out, exactly why President Trump will be thrown off the ballot. Listen.
What does this really mean for the former president in the state of Colorado tonight?
Well, it's definitely a big case. The fact of the matter is the Colorado Supreme Court has determined that Donald Trump did engage in insurrection and that his actions have disqualified him from being president. I just think the gravity of that in itself is just remarkable. We've never had a president inside an insurrection and then try to run for the presidency again.
So she says, quote, the fact of the matter is that Donald Trump engaged in insurrection. Let's bring in legal expert, constitutional legal expert, media commentator, former prosecutor, Lionel from the Lionel Nation YouTube channel. Lionel, great to see you. Welcome back to Redacted. Always a thrill to have you here on the show.
Thank you, sir.
All right, so you heard the Secretary of State saying specifically the fact of the matter is that Donald Trump engaged in insurrection, pointing specifically to the 14th Amendment of the United States. I think, you know, we love to talk about history here on this show. Most Americans, I don't think, understand that the 14th Amendment put into law in 1868, right after the Civil War. This was a Civil War amendment. I mean, it was meant really to keep members of the Confederacy from becoming president of the United States, becoming members of Congress. It really was put in place to bar those individuals from taking part in the government after the end of the Civil War. So she says the fact of the matter is he engaged in insurrection. So can you get to the heart of the legal question here? What specifically did he do that she is confident that he did?
Well, first, the question is this a self-executing statute? Must there be a prior determination of insurrection? I will then say, what is insurrection? You know, it was very common for people in our regular parlance to use the word insurrection, sedition, rebellion, seditious conspiracy. And we use these words, but what does that mean? Does that mean an uprising against the government? Does that mean an uprising? We don't know. But let me be a little arcane just for 1 second, because I find this to be fascinating. I like to read the statute. Now, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment reads as follows, and I'm going to try my best to read through this, but just listen to this. It says, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or an elector of president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state who, listen to this, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state. Did Donald Trump previously take an oath as a member of Congress, an officer of the United States, kind of like a subordinate agency member of you, or a member of the state legislature? The answer is no.
No, I don't remember him serving in the New York State Legislature. I don't remember him becoming an officer of the executive branch. He was president of the United States.
Now, we can't ask, why did they phrase it like this? I don't know.
So it's pretty vague.
This is a wonderful document, the Constitution. But if I could tell you the inconsistencies, but let me also tell you, there's another part which is important, because we're going to read this very carefully. It says, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion. Now, shall have engaged. I'm hearing people talking about incitement. I heard there was a YouTube channel, I'm not going to mention the name, but somebody who purports to be a lawyer used the word sedition. And there's no, what do you mean sedition? We use these words as, I guess, commonplace, just like we say he's a traitor. So the bottom line is simply this. Number one, I would say that under this amendment, it doesn't apply. To be even more arcane and recondite, Section 4 afterwards talks about different claims that will not be honored by the government. And one of them is claims for the loss or emancipation of any slave. So what they're saying is, after we're done with the Civil War and after we have Reconstruction, don't come back and file any claim, because now that we freed your slave, we're not going to pay you back because slavery is void. The reason why that's important is that there's a concept called in pari materia. That shows us the tenor, the framework, the idea of what this was dealing with. It was a post-Civil War, post-Reconstruction. And by the way, this becomes moot because later on there are these amnesty statutes sometimes 100 years later, but to invite Jefferson Davis back into the realm. So what we're doing is, this is a Hail Mary. And despite my brilliant treatise heretofore, there are people who are going to say, no, that's not true. That doesn't apply. But the bottom line then is, okay, irrespective of this, let's assume that this was not a self-executing statute. Because how does this work? Does the Secretary of State say, how many people think it was insurrection? Okay, that's good. Rebellion. We don't know. But let's assume that we had an actual hearing, or there was this preliminary determination of whether Donald Trump actually violated anything. What did he do?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let's go to that day, because much of what he did that day has been silenced on social media. Of course, his video response that afternoon was taken off of Twitter, right? He was banned on Twitter. So his video response, where he was telling people to go home, not to engage in violence, have your voices heard, right? Have your voices heard.
Right.
Don't engage in violence. No violence. I think he said no violence like, I don't know, three or four times. So is that an incitement to an insurrection? Did he engage in insurrection?
Who arranged this first? He didn't do it. They did. And when you say they, who are they? You had the Proud Boys. You had the feller with the eye patch. You had the Valkyrie helmet dude. You've got all these other people.
You had the pipe bomber. You had the feds. You had the FBI, we now know, right?
And you had innocent schmucks who just happened to live under the delusion that, well, we're going to go and we're going to stand in front of our Capitol. And all of a sudden they were, you know, corralled into some arrest. Other people also invited in. Come on in. Come on into the Congress.
Yeah, the Capitol Police waving people through the doorways, right, et cetera. Yeah.
Ashley Babbitt. I don't know what happened to her. Oops. Now, out of those, the aforementioned groups, Donald Trump, what did he have to even do? Did he say, all right, everybody meet, you be there. This was on its own. This was going to happen. Now, there were some people, and by the way, one of the worst statutes, if you want to get somebody on something, and this surprises a lot of people, seditious conspiracy. This is basically something that says if you have two or more people conspire to basically interrupt, interfere with, obstruct some legal transfer, some legal procedure, namely the certification of votes or whatever it is, that could be construed as seditious conspiracy. Okay, fine. He didn't do that. Did he aid or abet or incite? Let's get more legal. 1969 Supreme Court case, Brandenburg against Ohio, which says basically, it's not only do you have to say something and to inspire, to encourage, you've got to incite. You've got to do something that makes the imminent reaction, imminent response evident. It's not just, hey, listen, you people do what you think is right and yay. No. If he says, I want you to go into that Capitol and I want you to find Mike Pence and I want you to drag him out and I want you to, well, that's, right, I mean, right, that's absurd.
I didn't hear him say that. I didn't hear him say
never
that.
Never even got close. I think there was something about, come on, Mike, do the right thing. Now
right.
This, you can't get more vague than this. What this also is the usurpation of the franchise. This is an end around. Is this, by the way, another legal issue? Is this a political action or is this legal? Impeachment is political. It is no ground in law. You can impeach for anything.
It's not a criminal. It's not a criminal proceeding. It's not a criminal proceeding.
Not at all.
It's a political proceeding.
And you don't need high crimes, misdemeanors, whatever, what was it, Gerald Ford said, whatever 50% say it is, that's purely political. This is a different story. Now, remember, Marjorie Taylor Greene, I believe, had that, they had tried it with her, and somebody said, no, that didn't apply. Some courts have said it would not hold or would not substantiate a valid claim. The Supremes are going to hear this. Now, with the conservative bloc, they're going to look at this thing, and you have to ask yourself, you go back to Nino Scalia, the originalist, at the time this was written, based upon the context, with the framework, with what they said at the time, that is the only framework, because we have, I think this was used once during World War I, I think recently there was a January 6th person. This is never used. And by virtue of the fact of the paucity of cases that we have, it was never, nobody even thought of this. This is a Hail Mary last ditch effort, which is going to do nothing but just elevate him to almost even greater superstar status. The martyrdom, every time they try to crush this man, it backfires. So he has a variety of legal issues. I hope he gets to it. And I hope he, let me say this politely, I hope he gets a more sober, dedicated, and formidable legal team to handle this. people who are not necessarily looking for adulation and
right, publicity. Right. The television cameras and all of that, but just focusing on the constitutionality of this and the statute specifically. So I'll get you out of here on this, Lionel, which is what happens next at the Supreme Court level. I mean, we've got candidates in Iowa. We are up against the clock now. So now it's Christmas holiday. The Supreme Court in Colorado hands this down. Now the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court in the United States, presumably will have to handle this now.
Right.
When do you think that's going to happen? How do you think they will handle this and how quickly?
They will put this on. In fact, it's been delayed until the Supreme Court can deal with it. I think it's going to be on an accelerated basis, an emergency basis. But let me tell you, when it comes to the Supreme Court, you never know what they're going to do. Who knows? Just when you think sometimes they obviously have to. This is a case of absolute monumental importance. You also have conflict jurisdiction. You're going to have one court says this, one court says this. This is the perfect time to really seize the moment. And every time I've said this in the past, they've disappointed me. So I don't know. But I think ultimately, based upon the intent of the Constitution, the way this is being done, and for purposes of future iterations of the franchise, they will rule against this attempt on Colorado. And by the way, people who are doing this are, you can see by the smirk, by the look of delight, it's like, I might be the, you know, the George Washington of, this is actual insurrection.
Right,
what is happening right now?
They're jubilant. They're jubilant. I mean, you saw the Secretary of State. She's jubilant about it. She was tweeting about it. She loves the fact that Donald, no man can call for an insurrection and then become president of the United States once again.
But he never.
Right.
Last thing, very, very, very quickly. This is very dangerous. Now you got to think about the other. If Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or somebody were to, if I were to find some, and they may not run again, but let's assume I find some. Peace, where Kamala Harris cheered on, let's say, the George Floyd protesters, the BLM protesters, Antifa protesters, and said, yes, you know, show your whatever. What if another Secretary of State were to view that as somehow inspiring, inciting, aiding, abetting, counseling, procuring, hiring a new form of insurrection? Do you know how dangerous this is? When Don Lemon years ago said, "Well, this is another peaceful," I know he's not an official, but when all of those George Floyd riots were going on, people were applauding those. Why could I not look at that as a form of rebellion, insurrection, treason, sedition, inciting riots by basically tacitly giving the okay to these people to continue doing this? Do you want to go down that road?
And Lionel, it wasn't even applause. President Biden specifically got up and gave a speech where he supported the protests for Black Lives Matter and George Floyd. And those protests, of course, were burning cities, destroying businesses. And he specifically said, we need to support the end of systemic racism and these protests and support these protests. So what Americans call to arms. Like, yeah, let's go and loot stores. President Biden's telling us to go and loot stores and support the end, you know, support the end of systemic racism, whatever that specifically means under those terms. So, yeah, absolutely, he could have done this. So do you believe then, I guess, at the end of the day, when you look at this statute, you look at this decision by the Colorado Supreme Court, does this stand a snowball's chance in hell of sticking?
Yes.
It
I'm
does.
Sorry to say this. You can't, how do I say this? I cannot tell you how many times when the Supreme Court will look at this great issue and focus on something, and they'll ask, for example, was this an abuse of discretion? Is this in any way a violative of, I mean, who knows? But I think that the bigger picture that they're looking at right now, and by the way, keep in mind, what's going on with that, and I want to make this political, but that conservative wing who have been under attack, they stole the Dobbs memo, which we still don't know who did it. And believe me, you don't need Columbo to figure this one out. You had Supreme Court justices whose lives and whose families were threatened during these. They're mad. And then now you have new attacks going after their financials. So they're now being given the opportunity to say, let's see, can we do something? Is there a way for us to completely discredit this within the parameters of the Constitution? You betcha. They're human. And aside from that, you don't need to be an expert to know this. Politics, the franchise, you want it unfettered. You want people to be able to speak. You want them to be able to go to the ballot box and make their choice, irrespective. Again, who does this? A clerk? A secretary of state? Somebody? Does this go for local? Local? I mean, are we going to just completely reverse and upend the notion of the vote, the franchise? It's I can't believe how this is an insurrection. That's the irony of this.
So I know I said I was going to get you out of here a minute ago. I'll get you out of here on this question, Lai, because I keep thinking of different things. I think it's absolutely fascinating. But this piece about, okay, Colorado has 9 electoral votes, right? So now if President Trump is off the ballot in Colorado, 9 electoral votes, it's not going to make or break him right now. I mean, maybe, right? So he's got, it's not like it's California, okay, where we're looking at.
He's not going to win in any way.
Well, right. So, okay. So if he's taken off the ballot in Colorado, does this open up the doors now for other states to do, other liberal states to do the same thing? Pennsylvania.
Are you kidding? Absolutely. In fact, they will be rushing. They will be rushing to be within their particular framework of this, I guess, is Democratic fiefdom, you know, fiefdom, where they want to be the ones who eventually will be able to look back and say, I was the one who finally did him in. This man is being hit from every corner. Remember, he was impeached twice. They went after him with the emoluments clause. They went after his family, his businesses. Here in New York, he is on trial for something which basically he was found, in essence, guilty or liable of without ever having the chance to put any information on. He has other charges. We still have the Jack Smith cases. We still have the Georgia cases. Look what they're doing to Rudy Giuliani. This is a swarm. This is like piranhas. This is a feeding frenzy. This man hasn't, what they've done to him is beyond the pale. It's what, look, if you don't like him, I understand it. I get it. But I can't believe this is allowed in our country. And the best part is, here's the best part. Law professors, judges, academics, and lawyers are scared. They're not going to go near this. There are teams right now dedicated to going after any lawyer who does anything that could in any way be construed as perpetuating the myth of election denial. I mean, it's how does he do it? And the real question I have is he, what does he want this for? What is he possibly, what, how does he get up every day and do this? My dream, just because forget the legal, this is what my dream is, to have him somehow, through the grace of God, win, because Gavin Newsom's going to be the Democratic nominee. Gavin Newsom is it. This idea of Joe Biden, let's just forget this. But if he could somehow, imagine if Trump would win, and he would say, you know what, no inauguration, forget it, I'm going to work, let's go. And he just starts, and instead of holding up signs, he just unravels this Gordian knot.
And just, I would love
because,
it.
Because the bottom line is simply this. Whether you like Trump or not, doesn't matter. He's chemotherapy. Chemotherapy is only for people with cancer. Radiation is for only people who are, it's their last thing. Trump, in any other situation, might not be the best choice. But the only way to shock treatment, our system, back into normalcy, is with him. Whether you like him or not, who else is going to do this? Ron DeSantis? Nikki Haley? Come on, you need somebody to go in there and tear down the pillars. I mean, this Samson or whatever right. This is a fight of our lives.
Really is. I mean,
Many people predicting we could see martial law, no election in 2024, that this could be a civil war. I mean, one thing's for sure. We cannot lecture other countries about democracy anymore. That's for sure. We're certainly seeing right now that the emperor has no clothes. But somebody who does have clothes, and we're thankful that he wore clothes today, is Lionel from Lionel Nation on the YouTube channel. We really appreciate it. Check out his great YouTube channel. Great constitutional awareness and insight. We really thank you so much, Lionel. And also, very brave man, just getting off the worst flu that he's ever had in his life. So thank you for this and providing some insights on a crazy day here. We really appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. Thank you, and Merry Christmas.
Thanks, Lionel. We appreciate it.
He's great. That was great.
Well, and so many people in our audience love Lionel because, well, first of all, he's a former prosecutor.
Yeah.
And he's a constitutional legal scholar. So he understands both the nuance of the law, but also the broader, bigger picture of this and how this plays out for these lawyers and these law firms that are going to, like, want to take on certain cases and they'll keep away from it. Like, he's aware of how these law firms will deal with this, which is also very important.
The last time we spoke to him, when President Trump's lawyers were sanctioned because they had made an appeal on one of the cases against him that's in court currently. Yeah. And so it's an attempt to scare and intimidate anyone who will defend him. And it's crazy.
Well, we've got more news to get to. Go ahead, David.
Really quick, I want that guy to deliver, Lionel, to deliver every bad story that I get delivered, because even though he's talking about the country falling apart, I was smiling.
Yeah. Like, I know. And he's like, he's right about Trump.
Trump is cancer. As cancer medicine.
Yeah, he's chemotherapy. Like, it's like, regardless of what you feel about Trump, like, you might not agree. Like, again, I didn't agree with his draining the swamp stuff, but I agree with him on so many policies. Absolutely, I did. But you might not love him. Who cares if you love him, right? He's going to get the job done? Is he going to go in there and kick people in the balls? That's what I want. I want someone to go in there with the chainsaw massacre is what I want in Washington. Literally want buildings. I want them shutting down this building. I want them closing this building. I want this department closed.
Like,
I want
the Randy Quaid character in Caddyshack.
Yes. Yeah. It's a flamethrower.
Yeah. Is it hard to say there's a man in my office with a flamethrower? Well, we shouldn't say that because that's insurrection.
Yeah, but no, I don't want to say anything violent. I'm saying close down, close them down, lay people off, get those federal employees out of there, get rid of these people. And who's brave enough to do it? And who doesn't care? Like, who doesn't care what you think of him? I don't know. And who else is going to do it? I think he is like a cancer drug right now.
And I don't know how to take that, David, what you just said about how when bad news is delivered, it makes you feel good, because we deliver bad news all the time. Are we putting you into a depressive state?
No, not at all. We're just not as jovial about it.
Let's try harder. Okay, I'll take that as a kick in the pants. I'm going to take my energy level.
Well, Raging Oracle in the chat says he's delusional and willing to throw out common sense in front of the cameras. He knows he wouldn't say the same things in front of a judge. Well, of course, in front of a judge, and you're talking one-on-one with a judge, it's a different...
He would be making a case-by-case, claim-by-claim. This is analysis of a bigger picture. What were you going to say, Philip?
Oh, no, it's just when we were talking about jovial, and I was saying, speak for yourself, I'm jovial as can be all the time.
Yeah, we're having fun.
Yeah.
This is what fun looks like.
This is what fun. We got more news to get fun about. We have got a big win, actually, for Julian Assange's lawyers. We're going to tell you about this breakthrough as we've been monitoring this case. Of course, we covered it last week, and now we have a major update for Julian Assange. I know it might not seem like the biggest piece of this in the world, but it's a huge, huge piece, and I really am excited about this. We're also going to look at the death of the mainstream media, because the new numbers are out, and holy smokes, it was actually crazy. We were doing some analysis, and not to pat ourselves on the back here at all, that's not what this is about. But looking at the numbers compared to like CNN, people who watch Redacted compared to CNN and MSNBC, holy smokes, like, we're actually destroying them on a nightly basis. The amount of people who watch Redacted and independent media, no one's watching CNN anymore. No one's watching MSNBC anymore.
Except
simply
accidentally
not.
In an airport.
Yeah, I guess that's about it. But so thanks to all of you guys for subscribing and being a part of our show here. We really appreciate it, and joining us every night. Well, we thank you.
And can I get a testament to that? Is like, you have like Apple and Android and all these platforms that try so hard to tell you that those are the YouTube, that those are the most relevant news. Like, I watched Redacted yesterday. I'm not subscribed to CNN. As soon as it was over, it kicked to a CNN video. I backed away right away. So it's like, even though the big powers are trying to tell you that's what you need to watch, they still aren't watching it.
They push it on you. I'd be curious to see how many of you guys who watch Redacted then after on YouTube, and I'm talking about Rumble. Rumble's a whole another animal, but we love Rumble. But on YouTube, if you're watching us on YouTube, do you, when you see one of our videos, you watch our show, what is the next video that's served up to you? Is it CNN? Is it MSNBC? Are they trying to push mainstream stuff on you after you watch one of our videos? Let us know in the chat below, and we'll all keep an eye on that, because we're going to get to that mainstream media story in a second.
Okay, but first, you guys, someone is actually going to be suing over spying on Americans. Now, we're 10 years past Edward Snowden's revelations that the government's spying on us. No consequence has ever happened for that. No one has sued the NSA or made them stop it, the CIA, none of that. Well, someone now is actually going to sue the CIA over spying, and the spying has to do with Julian Assange. So there are major implications in this case. This is a case we've been discussing where lawyers and journalists were spied on while meeting with Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. What's unusual is that usually cases against the CIA and the NSA are just dismissed out of hand. This one was not. In fact, the judge just ruled, just within the last 24 hours, that the CIA can be sued and this case will go forward. It's an incredible turn of events in the Assange case because it will decide a few things. One, when an American, so we know there are rules, they're not supposed to spy on Americans. They do, but they're not supposed to. But do all of those rules go out the window when an American goes abroad or puts themselves in certain situations? And has the government been throwing out all the rules out the window in pursuit of Julian Assange? Yes, they have been doing that. So back to this specific case. Remember this video we showed you last year when former CIA director and also former State Department Secretary of State thought that he was posing for a photo op, but instead got served with a lawsuit. I'll refresh your memory.
Sir, P-U-R-S-E-R. And his first name is Benjamin.
So this guy, he thought he was taking a picture, and he's like, here you go, lawsuit. So that's how that works. That kind of ruined his day. Now, here is one of the lawyers talking about how she was violated and her privacy was violated when she went to meet with Assange. She makes the case that that kind of put the stink on her, because now that she, as a lawyer, has been a target of NSA or CIA spying, rather, what client is going to want to work with her knowing the government is watching? And that's a valid thing to, you know, how it's actually damaging to her. Watch her her telling of the story.
On arrival, there was a strict protocol for the protection of Julian, we were told. Passports, mobile phones, cameras, laptops, recording devices, and other electronic equipment were turned over to the security guards in the lobby. We learned much later, through a criminal investigation under the supervision of a court in Spain, that while visitors like me were meeting with Julian in the embassy conference room, the guards next door were taking apart our phones, removing and photographing SIM cards, and we believe downloading data from our electronic equipment. Their boss, David Morales from UC Global, who appears to have been recruited by the CIA through associates of Sheldon Adelson during a visit to a tech conference, was making regular trips to Washington, D.C., to New York, to Las Vegas, reportedly to hand over thumb drives and to receive further instructions from his U.S. government handlers. In other words, during our meetings with Julian at the embassy, recordings of our confidential conversations and the contents of our electronic devices were being delivered into the hands of the United States government. I'm a New York lawyer. I have the right to assume that the U.S. government is not listening to my private and privileged conversations with my clients, and that information about other clients and cases I may have on my phone or laptop are secure from illegal government intrusion. This is not just a violation of our constitutional rights. This is an outrage.
That's it.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I should mention Rumble is down. Looks like someone attacked the Rumble stream. They might be under another attack. So our Rumble stream looks like it's down, but we are still live here on I almost said CNN.
Where are we?
Imagine,
no.
Can you imagine if CNN just started running our show? Their numbers, their ratings would go up. Anyway, we're still live on YouTube.
Okay. I was going to say that's news to me. Okay. Now, U.S. journalist Kevin Gostola has been following this case. He told us just a few days ago why this is so extraordinary. Let's recall why how he explained that.
The allegations in this is that these individuals who tried to visit Julian Assange were targeted simply because they were there talking to Julian Assange. And there was some interest on the part of the CIA to monitor those people so they could use it to facilitate expelling Julian Assange from the embassy. And this case right now, we have not seen a dismissal from the judge. It's extraordinary. Oftentimes, allegations of spying or criminality by the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, they usually can enter a court and just invoke national security or state secrets privilege and say that there's no way that this could be litigated. But the judge in the Southern District of New York is allowing them to continue with this lawsuit at the moment.
Okay, now, again, think about this. Edward Snowden gave us revelations in 2013 about government spying, and nobody ever changed it or paid a price. The Obama administration paid lip service to certain changes, but nothing really ever changed. And we've seen how we were continued to be spied upon as American citizens through COVID and other means, and now they're using the guise of misinformation. Apparently, Edward Snowden and Julian Assange are not good buds. That's in one of their books that I read this year. That's just a little inside baseball gossip. But a few interesting tidbits about this ruling. The court did dismiss at least part of the case against Mike Pompeo personally. So he is at least partially off the hook. That doesn't mean he won't have to testify or present evidence, but at least personally, maybe the plaintiffs will appeal to drag him back in. The court also ruled that the plaintiffs did not have a reasonable expectation of privacy when meeting with Assange. So that's kind of scary, right? So that anyone who comes in contact with Assange should know that they are now a target, that they're going to be surveyed because he's a wanted man. I mean, think about that as journalists. Like, if we are talking to people who the government has a case against who are defending themselves, that means us as journalists can be targeted too, which is what happened, right? It's almost like cooties, like, uh-oh, you spoke to someone who the government is targeting. Now they're going to target you as well. Now, what the judge is allowing to be litigated is two things: that they infringed on the plaintiff's expectation of privacy when they copied their phones. They also took pictures of the EIMEA number, which is like a serial number of your phone, so they can track even more. They literally just took them apart and copied things. And then also, let's see, the other thing. Oh, that they can seek injunctive relief against the CIA means make them stop doing something. Injunctive relief is like, we want a court to order them to do something or not do something. So could they then get a court to rule that the CIA can't spy in certain ways that would apply to all of us? Possibly. That's kind of a big possibly, but I want to put it out there. More important, what we learn from this is, can the government just do whatever it wants with your phone? And can they spy in this manner? And meanwhile, maybe, just maybe, we'll learn of all the extraordinary ways that the government has pursued Assange from day one, which could have implications for the Assange case if he is forced to fight it in the United States. Because he could prove, or a part of his defense would be, I have been unfairly targeted and my civil rights violated by the United States. I think it would be fairly easy for him to make that case, actually. For example, did you know that when he left Sweden, before any charges against him had been filed, his suitcase went missing? That happened. He checked his suitcase with laptops in them, and it vanished into thin air, never to be found again. In fact, the airport traced it. The airline traced it. They said it was put on the conveyor belt. It was scanned in again at various points, and then it mysteriously disappeared.
Oh, wow.
This suitcase contained three laptops that had WikiLeaks material, including evidence of a war crime. This is his a lawyer said that.
This isn't one of his greatest regrets, too, like he wouldn't have traveled with these laptops.
And also that he hadn't checked them, too. That feels like a little bit like a rookie move, like you got to keep those on you. The thing is that he paid for that flight with cash because he was paranoid about booking things in advance on websites because he thought he was being tracked. He was. So to go to the airport, buy...
take all these steps.
Right.
And then check your three laptops in.
It feels like just such a frustrating move. But yes, there was apparently more about U.S. troop activity in Afghanistan, and we just never got to see it, even though the Stockholm airport has, you know, filed a criminal complaint and looked for it. Who do you think took it? The airport can't find it. And I mean, I know luggage gets lost, that's something that happens, but the way in which this luggage was checked, and then disappeared between like point C and D, clearly a NATO country government has it.
Of course,
right?
Of course they do.
Yeah. So again, just quickly, we discussed this yesterday, but in case you missed it, a date has been set for a separate case that Assange himself is fighting against extradition to the United States. That's been set for February 20th. This may be his Hail Mary. We're not sure. Now we have a bipartisan resolution in Congress. That's this, the HR Resolution 934, supporting freeing Julian Assange. If you're a U.S. voter or you're a U.S. resident, call your representative and say, we support this, demand that we free Julian Assange. If you're not, if you're a UK voter, you can contact your MP or petition the House of Commons. You can learn more at freeassange.org. So that's your update on Julian Assange.
Amazing news. I've said it again. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I think he's going to be released. I think he's going to get out. One of our viewers tonight, I was texting commenting back and forth on YouTube about, and someone said, you know, because I said, I think he's going to go free maybe after February, after we get this ruling. I think there's a groundswell of support. And I think, yes, it's awful to have to wait till February, but I think there's enough pieces starting to go to be put in place now for him to be let out.
I just want to like put him in my guest room and keep him safe. Like,
whatever you
like,
need, Julian.
You're okay.
You're
here.
A hero.
I'll make you some hot food. And,
you're a hero.
You know, he has Asperger's.
Sleep outside for a year. Because,
yeah.
Like he's been indoors. Like,
yeah.
So he might want to just go camping out in the wilderness and just get away from society and be around.
I don't blame him.
He's not in a good way. In fact, he has a Portuguese doctor who's been. The doctor's laptop was hacked and the doctor's notes were taken. He's not healthy and he's extremely anxious because of, and well, again, he suffers from Asperger's as well.
Well, from the CIA standpoint, this is exactly what they want because they know they can't extradite him without all of this. So they've been dragging this out basically as like punishment. And that is the point, the punishment.
Yes,
being punished
exactly.
Without being prosecuted.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they go back and forth between, and also I'm sorry if anyone who has Asperger's, I shouldn't have used the word suffers. I don't know if that's the right way to say you have Asperger's. And so they'll say, oh, you know, he's acting particularly anxious. We're going to put you in solitary confinement. And then when he's in there, he gets worse. And then they take him out. And then they use that as an excuse to deny him access to his lawyers or to save free time, or they're like, oh, he might be a suicide risk. So they mess with him all the time. They are currently still doing that.
All right. Let us know your thoughts on this in the comments below. We really appreciate it. We're going to talk about the mainstream media being killed in just a second. The numbers are startling. This is going to be, I mean, I'm happy to dance on the graves of mainstream media organizations, the corrupt media. That is keeping us in this perpetual loop right now. And thank you for supporting independent media, independent journalism here. We are not controlled by anybody. We don't have any billionaires telling us what to say. We are independent. We have a small team. There's five of us, for crying out loud.
So you got Tucker just launched his thing and he has a membership. We have a membership, like a community that people can join. And it's still around and has been for a couple years, and CNN Plus couldn't last for like what?
3 months?
You know, that
2 months?
Just tell you something right there. Like,
no,
you know,
I mean, the numbers,
this community. And
I was going over CNN's numbers today. Their ratings, they average about 722,000. We, if you combine YouTube and Rumble, it's over 1 million a day compared to CNN. Like, what? Like, if you would have told me this 10 years ago when I was like a young, you know, a young journalist or whatever, a young buck, that someday your show Redacted would be beating CNN's numbers.
Right.
I would have fallen out of my chair.
When CNN was the thing that we both were aiming for when we were young journalist students, you know.
Maybe you were.
You didn't want a job in CNN when you were in college?
No.
Really? Even back then?
No.
I mean, I would have taken any broadcast job back then, you know, like you just want to get your foot in the door.
Yeah. No, I didn't really have a network that I cared about at all. Like I was just interested in broadcasting. I didn't care. I could have been on the History Channel for all I care. I didn't really care. Yeah.
It just sort of had the panache back when we were journalism
students.
Well, I mean,
back in the day, yeah. I mean, absolutely. Think about 24-hour news starting as a result of, you know, and thinking about war coverage. Of course, war built that network, right? And now you know how horrible it is, and you know how it was built on, and the lies that it was built on. That's why they love war so much. But no, I was very much not in favor of being on CNN from back in the day. Mm. Anyway, we're going to get to more news here in just a second. And I want to tell you about our store. Go to redactedstore.com. If you'd like to support independent journalism, you can do that. You can support us by going to, and you can pick up one of our hoodies, our t-shirts, our mugs, our stickers. I Will Not Comply is one of our hottest sellers. That one is one of our hottest mugs, by the way. Friends don't let friends watch the mainstream media.
And we're going to tell you exactly why in a second.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I take that back. Back in the day when there was like Crossfire and stuff, back in the day when Tucker was on Crossfire and all that, I would have appreciated to get in to do something like that back then.
Sure.
But I don't know. Just garbage now.
I don't know. I think of like what I thought my career could be looked
as a
like.
Journalist, yeah.
Yeah. Like Maria Bartiromo. You know,
yeah, one from CNB. Yeah, anyway.
So,
all right, let's talk about the mainstream media being killed. Let's get into this.
Okay. Well, mainstream media is dying, and they are the last to know. This was shared by Washington Post reporter Paul Farhip. Let's look at the ComScore numbers that he shares and then how he spins it as this is fine. Okay, so these are his edits here. He circled the year-over-year change. Now, this is how many people are looking at these various websites for news, either on mobile or total digital, you know, desktop and mobile or any other way. And then look at the change. Look at how all of them are just precipitously down from last year, the same time last year. Now, maybe my interpretation is at this same time last year, there still were people maybe buying the COVID narrative a little bit more. And this year, the COVID narrative has had a bad year. People don't buy that. Maybe I would say Hunter Biden is one. The war in Ukraine, we're going to talk about why, but look at how bad, for instance, New York Times down 38% from last year. The Atlantic down 8%. Washington Post down 10%, 15% for Forbes. Pretty much everybody is bleeding viewers in a single year. Now, this is just for online news. We already know broadcast viewers are crappy. Physical media readers down 2%. Yeah.
Really quick, do you think that could be because of the subscription model? Like if it was free, do you think that would be affected that much?
Or that's something that we're going to talk about. That's a good question, because here is where Farhip, this reporter, responds to that, saying, look at the response on the bottom where someone says, well, what happened to the LA Times? And he says, steeper paywall, perhaps, not sure. And the LA Times does have a paywall, so perhaps that's it. But I love how he responds to this question where this guy or girl, Keck Magician, says, good, go out of business. Nobody likes or needs you. And he says, it appears tens of millions of people actually do. Incorrect. These are measures of unique visitors over the course of a month. So you visit the same site 12 times a month, it still counts as one unique visitor. So people love us. There's still millions. This shows an amazing lack of introspection, don't you think?
And that's the LA Times saying that.
No, this is a reporter from the Washington Post.
Oh, the Washington Post. Okay.
Right.
Sorry.
If we were, because Clayton and I, we look at our numbers and we think, okay, you know, that story maybe didn't engage. Can we, you know, think about, you know, how we tell a different story? How do we best serve our audience? Like we think about how we tell our stories and present our news in a way like we're not sitting here blaming other things. Like, oh, ratings are up when there's a war and down when there's
no,
not.
No, here's what we do. Like, if, okay, we do a story on Syria. I'm like, oh, man, I wish I would have done a better job with this part of it, or I wish I would have articulated this better.
Right.
Like, I'm not looking, yeah, after the show, and I do a postmortem, and I think about how we could have done something better, how we could have brought out a different piece of information for you, right? I don't sit there and think,
oh, it's external factors. It's not me.
Yeah, it's,
they still love me. That's like, that is a way to cling to your delusion of importance.
And how can we spin well, don't forget to push the narrative?
Yeah.
What, Philip?
Yeah, I was going to say, and don't forget the ever popular, it's your fault as the audience. You just don't, you're not media literate anymore. So it's, right. It's your guys' fault that you're not consuming our content. How right. dare
so,
you?
Yeah, it's CNN's it's audience.
Gen
it's,
Z.
It's CNN's audience that they've fled and don't watch them anymore.
Right.
They're apparently just, they're just too stupid now.
Yeah.
They're, and you know, they should be watching CNN because they're just too stupid.
What were you saying, David? Did you finish that thought?
I just said we're something about pushing an agenda. I don't even remember
exactly
how I said it, but
yeah.
We're not sitting there thinking, what agenda can we push? How can we spin this?
No, but there are times when, like Clayton brings up Syria or certain stories that I think maybe are smaller on the international scale, and I wonder, why weren't people more engaged with that one? Did I not do it justice by telling this story because it's important?
Yeah, that's the thing
do.
That frustrates me. If I okay, let's say we cover a story like Somalia, right? So if we have a large American audience, maybe that audience is just not, they see it pop up in the YouTube algorithm or something like that, and they see the title and they're like, oh, Somalia, I'm just not going to watch that. And it breaks my heart because that's an incredibly important story, right? Or Yemen, or God knows, Congo, or how many stories do we Haiti. Right. Here's a story that yes. I was very passionate about. I think it's incredibly important that the United States is meddling in Haiti. And the mainstream media was totally ignoring the story. And one of our correspondents, Dan Cohen, doing an amazing job covering Haiti. And, you know, it's like, OK, it would upset me if more eyeballs didn't get to see the story.
Sure.
Right. Like, how can we bring more awareness to this? How could we have done it better? And all of that. So.
But that's not an agenda. It's just, we care about these pieces. We put a lot of work into them, and then we really want them to get in front of an audience so that you can respond appropriately, to things that you have a vote on. And so, I wouldn't call that an agenda, but again, we don't lack humility about this. So we're willing to see what should we be doing different. It seems like the mainstream media absolutely is not. Journalist Michael Schellenberger put together this quick list of why he thinks people have lost trust in the media. Here is what he calls key disinformation campaigns that just, you know, the media ran with, and we know that the data shows something different. And now we don't trust them. So you can read this, you know, it's Trump is a Russian asset. COVID lab leak is debunked as a conspiracy theory. Hunter Biden laptop, of course, vaccines, ignoring the Twitter files, all of that stuff. I can add to this. I mean, can you add to more reasons why you think, Ukraine is an ethical democracy and Zelensky is a great guy? Lack of curiosity about January 6th prosecutions and various footage that may not support their narrative. Go ahead.
Their hosts have condescending personalities, I think, in a lot of ways.
Oh, I'm going to show you something about that. Yeah.
They talk down to their audience, right? I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's they're pushing an agenda, right? They're pushing an agenda down people's throats.
Yes. In fact, one Twitter user put this together recently, showing the media absolutely condescending anyone who didn't take the vaccine. And you're right. You guys nailed it. They talk down their nose. They take a moral, superiority. It's a bit long, so we'll watch a few minutes because your response is just going to be so outraged. Take a look.
When the chips are down, these civilized people, they'll eat each other.
You are the unvaccinated. You are the problem. It is the unvaccinated who are the problem, period, end of story.
The only people that you can blame, this isn't shaming, this is the truth. Maybe they should be shamed, but the unvaccinated.
It's time to start blaming the unvaccinated folks, not the regular folks.
Anyone you came into contact with will blame you. as will the rest of us who have done the right thing by getting vaccinated.
Because frankly, we know that we can't trust the unvaccinated.
I think it's time to get our moral house in order, Anderson. It's the unvaccinated who are the threat.
All of us vaccinated folks are going to start wearing masks to protect the unvaccinated folks. It's called a Christian value.
You're basically punishing the vaccinated for the sins of the unvaccinated.
People are not behaving honorably. The unvaccinated are basically saying, well, it's open season for me. I can do whatever I want as well.
The unvaccinated are basically beating their breasts, running around the country saying, we don't care. We're living free and so forth.
We've been patient. But our patience is wearing thin.
The unvaccinated, a group that includes children and people acting like children. And the rest of us are starting to get pissed off.
The vaccinated feel the unvaccinated are making me upset or angry.
This is not about freedom or personal choice.
Well, my freedom is being kind of disturbed here. No, screw your freedom.
The other day, Howard Stern weighed in with a much different approach. Take a look.
When are we going to stop putting up with the idiots in this country and just say, you now, it's mandatory to get vaccinated? Their freedom.
But you're treading on our freedom and you're making other people sick and really you're killing
other
people.
So you get the idea. This goes on for 3 minutes. You can seek it out online. All of this. And no one ever apologized. They could just apologize and say, look, we didn't know. We bought the biopharmaceutical lines that... Yeah,
they sponsor every one of our segments.
Right.
This Anderson Cooper segment was brought to you by Pfizer. So can you imagine the contrition if they actually came out and they said, yeah, you know, Anderson Cooper 360 is a show sponsored by Pfizer. We just didn't do our homework as journalists and we were taking money from them.
We chose not to go through their clinical trials, mm-hmm. not to ask critical questions about their percentage of... infection rate. We just chose not to. And we believed that anyone who was choosing to do that was a conspiracy theorist. And so we thought that those people were unethical and should be punished. And we thought that we were the only ethical people. And we owe you an apology for that. Now, for a long time during the pandemic, I, you know, bought into a lot of the, like, you should wear a mask. You should not criticize people for wearing masks. I definitely have apologized for how I felt about that since. It's not that hard. Say you're sorry for things that you bought into, later researched, and realized that you were misinformed. Russiagate, January 6th, just say sorry and maybe you'll get some viewers back. It's not hard. Go ahead, David.
But I don't think they can do that because they have to sit down and they have to have discussions like, okay, we're going to run this story. How will this not piss off our sponsors? What can we and cannot say during this segment in order to keep this sponsor? So everything that they do has to go through that lens first. So that means like they couldn't come out and apologize because if they piss off Pfizer, then how much money do they lose? I just don't know
right.
how they get around that.
Yeah. So no wonder we all hate them collectively. You know, I still tune into mainstream media from time to time to just see what's going on there. And I just find myself screaming because I'm like, you didn't do your homework before you took that segment to air. Just do your homework. Now, here is indicative of how we all hate them collectively. This is a shared value right now, is hating the mainstream media. Here's a Gallup poll, also shared by Michael Schellenberger, showing how much people trust the mainstream media. Now, the green line says, how much do you trust mass media? The green line is people who trust a lot. The blue solid line, not very much. And the dotted line, none at all. So look at the trusters. The green line is a precipitous drop since the late 70s. The blue line, they don't trust, keep going up. And the none at all is absolutely skyrocketing up to 40%. Although I would imagine that's a conservative number. Now, interestingly enough, here was Elon Musk's response to Michael Schellenberger's report about that. He's like, that's interesting because the mainstream media, you know, is shrinking, but X has grown by a similar percentage. It's almost a reverse linear relationship, right? As the mainstream media declines, these alternative outlets for news and conversation about news is growing. And so when he said that, I was interested. So we went to our dashboard. This is for YouTube only. We have grown, it says there, by 44%. this year in views.
So this is the numbers from today.
These are redacted's numbers. 47% more from last year in watch time. So, I definitely want to thank our viewers for this, but I think that it's also indicative that alternative media is replacing mainstream media. I can't say enough. Thank you so much for coming here and participating with us. We know that this show is for our viewers. We take it responsibly. We want to be responsible. We take it seriously. We try really hard to be studied up, to be good stewards of this show for you. So thank you for being here. We couldn't do it without you. And I'm thrilled to see these numbers again in inverse relationship.
Yeah, and thank you. Really, I mean, from the bottom of our hearts, thank you for an amazing year and supporting independent journalism and the journalists that we have on here who, you know, are not working for billionaire corporations. I mean, every journalist we have on here is independent.
Several of them have lost their channels, lost their some of their livelihood.
Their channels have been shut down and banned and censored. So it's an uphill battle. I mean, so we asked you earlier. When you watch us on YouTube, not Rumble, Rumble doesn't do this. Rumble is a free speech platform, and we love Rumble. But YouTube, of course, is Google and so forth. When you watch one of our videos, you watch us live, what comes up next? If you have the autoplay feature turned on, what plays next? And almost so many of you said CNN videos play next, MSNBC videos play next, Forbes videos play next, Bloomberg videos play next. They don't show another one of our videos, or they don't show, somebody else maybe in our sphere. They don't, maybe they show a Tucker video. No, they don't do that. They show CNN, MSNBC, Forbes, and Bloomberg.
If it's an on auto roll.
Now, someone in our chat just said, I don't see CNN anymore and MSNBC anymore because I always thumbs down them when they pop up. So they don't serve them up to me anymore. So please, you could give a like for us. And then if you see like a CNN video pop up.
Well, don't say that. Do what you legitimately want to do. But
yeah, that's right. Interact with it however you like.
Right.
You can give it the middle finger if you'd like. You can give us the middle finger if you like. You can do whatever you want. If there was a middle finger option, I would encourage you all to give us the middle finger. I'd be fine with that. I have thick skin. Go ahead, David. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, like, I personally try to not get that put in my newsfeed. I swipe left as soon as they come on, but they still show me that. However, it's perfect on other channels. If I watch content, it generally leads me right to what I want next. But no matter what I've done, I can't get them to stop sending me CNN and MSNBC and all that stuff.
Right. Yeah, it's a counter narrative.
It's crazy. It's like they're purposefully serving it up. They're purposefully serving it up just so that our audience can we want to have counter programming so that, that you only get liberal news or liberal media that we're trying to serve to you.
Right.
It's crazy.
Well, tell us what you think of these numbers, why you maybe trust or mistrust mainstream media. For me, it has been mostly just a journey of researching for this show. Because I bought a lot of bullshit from the mainstream media until I sat down here and thought, well, I better be really studied if I'm going to, host this show with Clayton. And then I was like, they're lying. They're lying to us. And the more you study, the more you realize that they're either lazy, incompetent, or liars.
Yeah, I mean, it's like what Tucker says, right? Tucker was all in on the Iraq war. He bought that hook, line, and sinker. He said it was one of the greatest mistakes of his life. And he's like, I'll never stop apologizing for it. You learn about it. You make mistakes. You become aware. And you try to change. You try to improve. I think we all try to do that. We're never going to get things perfect. We try every day, though, to do our damnedest to get things that the mainstream media is ignoring and the propaganda that the mainstream media is spinning. We try to navigate through it. So I think it's...
Don't you think that's kind of the difference between us and somebody that's in the mainstream media? Because they're not down the rabbit holes and down into the trenches like we are on a daily basis looking for these stories, because we have to dig for our stories because they're hard to find on the mainstream.
Because we have no producers.
Right. And so they're sitting there, they're just getting fed whatever from whatever. So maybe that changes their worldview. And some of them actually do believe the stuff that they're spitting out.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when I worked for the mainstream media, if I was interviewing an author, I would read the book and the author would always say, oh, you read the book. Most of the other interviewers don't,
they
right?
They don't read the books.
Or
no.
There are many times I've been on panels with other people at, you know, my other broadcast jobs, and I would say, well, this book says this. No one else, they just don't seem to be studying because, you know, you're at the top echelon of your game. Most of it is fed to you. Just
they're given
a lot
their
of
handed
them
talking
just,
points.
They just don't study. So
that's a funny story.
They lack curiosity.
$30 million a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember one time I had an author on Fox News because I used to anchor the news on Fox News. I did a morning show called Fox and Friends. And we used to have authors on from time to time, you know, and I was, you know, history buff. And so I remember one time we had an author on from Abraham Lincoln. He wrote a book, biography of Abraham Lincoln. And remember, I read the book and then I did the interview with him and I was pulling out things from the book and engaging with
that
him.
That always shocks them.
Yeah. And he sent a note to my bosses.
Yeah.
And it was like, can I do another interview with him? He read the book and he knew everything. And I was like, right. Don't people read the book? It seems like you're interviewing an author about the book. How do you not read the book?
They don't.
Like what kind of, I don't know.
Readers are leaders, like I tell my
anyway.
Kids. So, okay. Well, we pledge to you to continue to work really hard, study really hard, be worthy of you. We are so thankful that you're here.
We don't take you for granted, honestly. I mean, every day we work our asses off for you guys, and we really, really try hard. And if we let you down, we're sorry about that. We will try harder the next day. That's our goal. So
and we'll let
people
you
asking
know.
Asking in the chat here, like, you know, when are you going to have on RFK Jr.? I actually just texted him today and asked him to come on. I'm waiting to get back from him on that. So we'll see about RFK Jr. coming on the show here. We've been trying to line that up probably during the holidays. President Trump. Someone just asked, when will President Trump be on the show? We're working on that as well. We've got a lot of things lined up right now on the Julian Assange front and everything. So we are not sleeping, and we will continue to do as much work as we can for you guys. So we really appreciate it.
All right. That's going to do it for us today. Thank you so much for joining us. We will be back here tomorrow, last working day before the holiday, before the Christmas break. So join us if you will. We will not have live shows next week. Please be here tomorrow.
Unless a lot of shit happens. I was just telling a friend of mine today, I said, every time we take a break.
Yes. The last time we took a break was October 7th.
Yeah. Can you freaking imagine?
We were literally, yeah.
Yeah.
We were in Egypt.
Yeah. So then, yeah, covering it from Egypt. And it was just like, oh my God, really? This happened while we're traveling to Egypt. And
we were a 4-hour car ride from Gaza.
Yeah.
So anyway,
yeah, not to go down that rabbit hole. But anyway, my point is, We will be around, and God forbid, we hope nothing happens. We hope everyone has
Clayton
a peaceful...
Clayton might sneak up here and turn on
the We hope blood. Everyone has a peaceful Christmas. That's what I'm trying to say. So we hope there's not craziness.
Right. Okay. We've done enough craziness for tonight.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you here tomorrow, everybody. Good night.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of... Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.